Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. College graduations are well underway, and we're glad to see them come back. What we're not so happy to talk about tonight is the college debt that will follow so many newly minted degree holders for years to come. And that's just the beginning. Other factors can contribute to the piling on of debt long after college is in the rearview mirror. So how do you manage the college debt and other financial burdens weighing us down? Well, joining me to talk about this is Dr. Tisa Silver Kennedy, collegiate financial wellness expert and author of Borrowing While Black. We have a doozy of a conversation to talk about tonight. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or follow me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Tisa, how are you? It is so good to talk to you again after all of these years.
Good evening, Harold. It's always a pleasure. I'm doing well, and thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. You're doing well, but a lot of young people who have marched across the stage, literally or virtually, are happy that they have their sheepskins, but the reality is that the day after, the week after, the month after graduation, there is debt that is staring them straight in the face. Kind of paint a picture for me of what young people in the class of 2021 is dealing with.
Well, thankfully, student loan borrowers are granted a grace period immediately after graduation or separating from their institution. So the first thing they have to look forward to is usually about 6 months where no payment is expected. And during that time, they are expected to get their lives together, figure out where their income is coming from, and choose a student loan repayment plan. For Black students, the grace period, of course, still applies, but the concern there is that Black students typically graduate owing more debt than their counterparts, to the tune of about $7,400. And that figure may have grown by now. But when you owe that much more debt, just think about the drain on your income year after year and how difficult it can be to repay that debt when you're starting at such a deficit compared to your counterparts.
Why is it different for Black students?
Well, Black students tend to come from households where the income and the wealth are lagging, so there's a greater reliance on student loans since free forms of aid like the federal Pell Grant just don't have enough purchasing power to pay for the entire collegiate experience. So if there's greater reliance on loans, Black students are more likely to borrow, and unfortunately, we graduate less often and earn less upon graduation. All of that leads to Black students or Black borrowers experiencing a greater amount of difficulty in repayment. Some stats have shown that Black graduates are 5 times more likely to default on their student loans than their white counterparts. And by the time a person gets to a student loan default, this means that they have missed payments for 9 months. So it's not just something that happens overnight. This is 9 months, 270 days of not making a payment, not having reached out to a loan servicer to ask for a remedy. And that's a situation that's completely avoidable, but also devastating to a person's credit history.
You talk about that 6 months grace period. As difficult as it is for young people to find jobs after graduation, not just this year, but also particularly in 2020, in the midst of the pandemic, that 6 months really seems not so much as a grace period, but 6 months of anxiety.
Yes, and it's something that can be very intimidating. The loans themselves are intimidating for people who have never borrowed before attending college. In addition to that, there are several repayments that borrowers can enroll in. Some of them are based strictly upon how much the student has borrowed. Others are based on household characteristics like income or their tax filing status. But still, the task of looking over those repayment options and trying to figure out on your own what it is you should do fresh out of school can sometimes be intimidating.
How much money are we talking about on average for new graduates, what kind of debt are they looking at?
Well, I've seen ranges from about $27,000 to $36,000, but what is pretty standard is that black students generally borrow more than white students. So whatever the average level is that you're seeing out there, the level for most black students is probably significantly higher.
But, you know, I've also seen when students have gone to, you know, Ivy League or, you know, upper tier colleges and universities that may not have the financial support of being a state school, you know, your NYU's, your, you know, and the University of North Carolina's and places like that. When we are talking about students who come out of school with, you know, more than $50,000, sometimes as much as $100,000 worth of debt, that to me is incomprehensible.
Yes, well, I can tell you in my former role advising students on how to repay their loans at a graduate professional campus, there was a point during the year when a person had to borrow at least $250,000 to get on my calendar. So it's very possible for someone to get into six-figure debt to pursue higher education. And in some cases, it's necessary because of the profession that they're trying to pursue. But when a person has to figure out how they're going to repay those loans, that can be a stressful process.
Well, I would also imagine when you're talking about that kind of money and then not being able to find a job immediately or even, you know, after a year or so, you may start to question, you know, whether or not it was all worth it. And, you know, and even as an advocate of education and the child of educators, I still, you know, you have to question it sometimes.
Absolutely. Higher education does have value, but what I don't want to see is students just go blindly into higher education to any institution that will accept them. There's definitely value to getting that four-year degree or a two-year degree. However, you have to be very careful about examining the cost versus the benefits.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about managing college debt and some of the other financial burdens that are weighing us down. I'm talking to Dr. Tisa Silver Kennedy. She is a collegiate financial wellness expert and author of the book Borrowing While Black. If you have any comments, if you have any questions for her, please give us a call. This is an opportunity for you to figure out how your young person, or if they happen to be listening, how they certainly can get rid of this college debt. Lines are open again at 202-319-7810. So, first things first, and is the first thing looking at the cost of college even before you go, or do you focus more on where you are after you graduate?
It's a combination of both, because if you want to get a clear view of the costs and the benefits, you've got to look at how much you're going to have to pay in order to get that credential and how much you can expect to earn after the fact. So it's definitely a combination. And I would say that students need to make sure that they're getting accurate information about the cost of higher education, because it's very easy to, you know, listen to the headlines and hear what people are saying about student loans and to become turned off by higher education because it seems as though it's unaffordable. However, it can be affordable and it can be financed responsibly, but you have to know how much it's going to cost and you need to know accurate information. The best source of information about how much the collegiate experience is going to cost is the school's financial aid website. So go straight to the source, get the information about tuition fees, living expenses, room and board, and then build around that cost because that's the most accurate figure to start with.
You know, one of the things that I've always found rather confounding is for students who are going to college and they are on the lower end of the economic spectrum, there is help for them. But then you have students who, and the story is, you know, I'm an average or just above average student, so there's no help for me or for my parents who make too much money on paper. And so, you know, what do I do about that?
So you really have to explore your resources. The first place to go, of course, is the financial aid website of all of the colleges that you're interested in so that you can get a grasp on cost. Have a talk, if you're the student, with your parents and your family about how much they could reasonably contribute to your higher education. And after you've gone to the school, that's when you got to go to the government and start from the top down. First place I'd say is go to the federal government. And when it's time to apply for college, you want to complete what's called the free application for federal student aid. Even though it's a federal application, many states use that form to evaluate students' eligibility for state scholarships. So you start with that federal form. You'll find out how much aid you're eligible for on the federal level. You can find the same thing out at the state level. After you've exhausted federal and state, then it's time to go local. I'm talking about looking at who your state senators and delegates are, seeing if they have scholarships available, taking a look at your city and seeing if your mayor or city council persons offer scholarships. After you've exhausted the government, that's when your search for private dollars begins.
Go ahead.
Okay. And I was going to say, you can go online, look up hashtag scholarships for people with certain characteristics or from certain areas. And once you've combined all of those resources, hopefully that will give you something to put a dent in what you would have had to borrow.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about managing college debt and other financial burdens that are weighing us down. Let's go to the phone lines. Glenn, calling from Montgomery County, Maryland. Thanks for calling, Glenn. What's on your mind?
I'd like to make a call.
Glenn, give us a call back if we can. Let's go to Iris. Iris, calling from Temple Hills. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Calling because I need some information in reference to, with all the COVID going on, they had a lot of deferments with the student loans. When are you supposed to start paying them back, if we're going to be paying them back? And should, is it when you have noticed time to start getting a refinancing of your student loan? When should you consider that?
I am so glad that you brought up the concept of refinancing. First, I want to take it back to the conversation about cancellation and relief right now. So most federal student loan borrowers are eligible for a forbearance, which is just a fancy way of saying a temporary pause in payments. And that current forbearance is set to expire at the end of September, meaning that people will be expected to resume their payments probably 1 to 2 months later. So right now, you don't have to do a thing. Your loans are just sitting there, not accruing interest, and no payments are required. However, if you decide to refinance your loans, you will automatically be going from being a federal student loan borrower to a private student loan borrower because the federal government does not offer refinancing on student loans. You would have to find a private lender. As soon as you get that private loan, you will become ineligible for any benefit that is offered to federal student loan borrowers. So refinancing right now of federal direct student loans would probably be the worst thing that you could do, because if you're holding out hope for that large-scale cancellation, once you refinance, you would lose eligibility for it. So even though refinancing is something that people pursue with good intentions, usually to try to find a lower interest rate, in this particular case, getting a lower interest rate might mean that you have effectively refinanced yourself out of cancellation or forgiveness. So for the meantime, hold tight. You can look at interest rates and compare the options, but do not refinance your federal student loans because you will become ineligible for any benefit that's currently offered to federal student loan borrowers.
Iris, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Raquel, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Raquel. What's on your mind?
Hi. You know, I am just, I'm glad we're talking about this subject. I want to take it to the topic where she was speaking about parents who make a certain amount of money. And, you know, they could be straight-A students. My daughter went to a predominantly Caucasian institution and for high school, and she was a straight-A student, and the standard of learning was higher at the PWI. So when she went to apply for schools, she, you know, got accepted into more of the PWI schools. But what I found was that more of the historically black colleges and universities that we had applied to didn't really offer her the same amount of money that the PWIs had offered her. And I was a little perplexed by that because they were using, you know, me and my husband's income as opposed to her grades and her, you know, academic achievements and, you know, those types of things. And I just want to know if you can speak on that a little bit. Why is it that the HBCUs don't tend to offer, you know, children coming from a particular household that makes a certain amount of income the same amount of money based on academic achievement for, you know,
well, Raquel, we definitely get your point. Let me see if Dr. Silver Kennedy can address your question. Go right ahead, Tisa.
Absolutely. So I think that this is a great topic that you brought up because it really brings to the forefront the difference in the amount of funding available to HBCUs versus PWIs. HBCU endowments pale in comparison to the size of the endowments of many PWIs and also some of those Ivy League schools that Harold mentioned earlier. So I definitely want you to know that it is not a penchant for not recognizing minority talent or even treating you differently because of the level of your household income. It's simply that there's less money to spread around in many cases. So even if there was, you know, this recognition that your student is great and a high achiever, there's only a certain amount of money available to spread. Fortunately, there has been a lot of interest in donating to HBCUs, so we've seen a lot of philanthropists step up and make these multi-million dollar donations, and that will help HBCUs be able to admit and provide aid to more students in the future. But unfortunately, it's just been one of those long-standing issues where the funds are just not available, and if you don't have the funds available, you can't make offers that are as attractive as some PWIs can.
Tori, thank you so much for your phone call. I need to take a break, but when we come back, I said Tori, we are going to talk to Tori, and we're also going to talk to Michael, calling from Beltsville. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This conversation is about managing college debt and some of the other financial burdens that could weigh you down long after college. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about managing college debt and other financial burdens that could weigh you down long after college. My guest is Dr. Tisa Silver Kennedy. She is a collegiate financial wellness expert and author of Borrowing While Black. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise we will get to your phone call. And you're certainly welcome to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or follow me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Let me go back to the phone lines. Tori, calling from Baltimore. Tori, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening, all. I guess my question is, I'm not part of the younger generation. I'm the older generation that went back to school to get my education.
Good for you.
Thank you. My concern is because I already have debt, and then I have to begin, in the next couple months to begin repaying my student loan debt. I put the stimulus checks that we received aside. Is that a good idea to help pay down my loan? I applied for jobs. I'm just waiting for that opportunity to advance in my career, change my career due to earning my degree. But do you think it's ideal to take, save stimulus money to pay towards that, as well as generating other incomes a different way? Until you're waiting for that career that you want to be in from, after getting your degree. And if I may piggyback on also, if I could add, if individuals could look at also credit unions and like local unions, because they do offer scholarships in some situation, free college college tuition too.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go right ahead, Tisa.
Well, thank you so much for the question. Also, congratulations to you for going back, returning to higher ed and seeing it through. I think that with the stimulus funds, what everyone does with it, it's definitely a personal decision. And if you still have it available at your disposal, then count yourself blessed. What I would say is that it is great to use some of that to pay down the debt. But when you're referring to student loans, it really depends on the type of loans that you have. If you have the loans that are right now in forbearance, not accruing interest, and meaning you don't have to make payments, then it doesn't benefit you to pay down that debt right now because the debt is not accruing any interest. You could just let it sit. And the reason I say you might want to let it sit if you have that type of debt that's already in forbearance is because if there is some type of large-scale forgiveness that comes from the Biden administration, I would want for you to be able to get the maximum benefit from that forgiveness. Mm. But even with that being said, if you really feel like, you know what, if I don't put this money toward debt right now, I'm going to take it and spend it on something else that would not be as productive, then perhaps that means you do need to pay down the debt. But what I would do is first suggest that you have an emergency fund ready to cover your expenses for at least 3 months. If you have other debt that has a higher interest rate than your student loans and is accruing interest right now, then perhaps you should pay down some of that debt. And then, like I said before, perhaps hold off on the student loan payment right now if you're in forbearance, because right now your debt is not accruing interest. It's not high priority. But you have to do what you're comfortable with. But just know that still having that money available to make decisions with, you're in a good position to start with.
Okay. Tori, thank you so much for your phone call. Michael, calling from Beltsville. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind? Michael, are you there? Michael, give me a call back if you can. Let's go to Jada calling from Baltimore. Jada, turn your radio down, please, and go right ahead.
Gotcha. All right, good afternoon. Thank you to everyone being on the line. Okay, so here's my thing. It's kind of like a comment, maybe a question. I'm curious about student loan debt because to me it feels so like it's a myth that college is expensive. I went to college back in 1994. I remember the days where I had to do my research for student loans or scholarships for FAFSA and all that at the library. Nowadays, people have it on their phone 24 hours at any time, 365 days. So I don't understand why are we still talking about student loans? And I've gone back and I've gotten my bachelor's degree. I've gone to vocational school where I've had to get another degree. I've gotten my master's all through doing my research about schools, the type of school I wanted to go to. I made sure it was affordable. I also went to community school college and doubled up. I went to community college, took my core classes, and went to a university. So please explain to me, why are we still talking about student loan debt when it seems so accessible to go to a college that you can actually afford and it not cost an arm and a leg?
A great question, Tisa.
It is a great question, and Jada, you are an extremely informed consumer, and that's what makes the difference. There are many people that even though, you know, federal information about federal and state aid is available online, they wouldn't know where to get it from. They might have the phone, but they're not familiar with those websites. So if everyone had that access to that information, had someone to point them in that direction, then more people would make, I think, more responsible decisions when it comes to money and choosing a college or career school. But that's just not the case for many people. So what happens is some students will just go to wherever they are accepted, and the price is something that they think about after the fact. So when a bill arrives, there's a scramble. How am I going to pay for this? What am I going to do? And it puts the student in a very tough situation because they want to see this thing through that they've started. And if you're a family member who is supporting this person as they're going to school, you might feel as though you want them to succeed too, and at this point, by any means necessary. And that's when the borrowing can come into play. In other cases, people are aware up front that they're going to have to pay student loans. The cost of college has risen so much so that student loans are inescapable for many people simply because they don't have that disposable income available to put towards school. So no amount of financial education that a person has is going to change the fact that some institutions cost $40,000 to $50,000 per year with living expenses included. So while there are lots of scholarships, there are some grants available out there, there are still many people that find themselves in a situation where they are, let's say, too wealthy to get the aid that's available to those people who exhibit the most need, but not wealthy enough to be able to handle that expense all on their own. So student loan debt, it's a topic that's not going to go away as long as the cost of college remains as expensive as it is. And I'm a huge advocate for community colleges, so I applaud your decision to go there and further your education. But just to put it out there, a Pell Grant is not enough right now to cover a student for 1 year to community college. So for people who are in those lower income brackets who need the most aid, even if they do get 100% of what a Pell Grant offers, they're still going to have a decent amount of money that they're going to have to come up with out of pocket, and that's because of affordability.
And I think, you know, part of it is, and I certainly applaud Jada's stick-to-itiveness. The ability to find that information, because there's no one-stop shopping. And we've talked about some of the scholarships in this conversation. So for the most part, it has focused on how not to get into that college debt. But for, and I'll give you two, you know, examples. I remember years ago on this program, we were talking about something, you know, quite similar. And after the program was over, I received a phone call in the newsroom from a listener. Her son was about to go to school in a month. And she was calling me to find resources to pay for that first year. And my question was, when did you start looking? And her response was, today. And I think that's part of it. And the other thing is that even, you know, the best students, if you don't have a full ride, a full scholarship paid for by the university, whether it's academic or athletic or what have you, a lot of students may do well that first year by stacking scholarships, whether it be from your church, whether it be from your parents' jobs, whether it be from fraternity and sororities or other kinds of organizations. But then after that first year, and unfortunately, even that first semester, that money is gone. And books are expensive. And then you kind of turn around and you try to stack again, because a lot of the scholarships that are often out there are for, you know, first year students, second year students. There are some obviously for, you know, later in the college career, juniors and seniors. But a lot of those scholarships, Tisa, are often directed at, you know, high school seniors and college freshmen and the like.
Absolutely. It's a tough job to piece together all of these different forms of financing. And even with the schools, the financial aid that schools offer can vary from 1 year to next. So college is just a very unique space in that you sign up, you know, you make this commitment, you want to go somewhere either for a two-year degree or four-year degree, and you don't know up front how much this is going to cost overall.
Yeah.
Because tuition usually increases every year. Costs change, and the level of aid that a student receives can vary from 1 year to the next. So it's very complex, and it can be very intimidating for students and their families.
Indeed. Jada, thank you so much for your input to the conversation. I really appreciate it. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Connie, calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling, Connie. What's on your mind?
Hi, how are you? This is I just love this topic, because I decided to go to school when my daughter was finished her master's, and I'm a senior, and age-wise, so how special. I understand what you're saying when they say they want to give these scholarships to the young folks. Well, as my mama would say, junior,
seniors in high school and freshmen, but when it comes to us older folks who just like, it's a goal I wanted to do a long time ago, but you know, life got in my way, so now I'm finishing.
Congratulations.
I went and got my associate's degree last year. Now I'm working on my bachelor's, and I am trying to pursue a master's. But the thing is, when I got in there, my counselor helped me to finish, and I finished with grants. With grants. He was like, you really want to do this now? I said, yes, I do. And the state of Maryland has so many grants. And I went and got my associate's all on grants.
Excellent. Excellent. I yet another great idea, and congratulations to you. I'll just invite me to the cookout.
Me too.
Yes, and I applaud you when people say, I don't want to. My daughter used to tell me, I don't want to go to grade 13. But I do find out in community college, those same professors at the University of Maryland, mm-hmm. over at Coppin State, and everywhere else, are teaching at these community colleges.
Yeah. Yes. And you know, they say, look, don't sleep on community colleges. They have become academically intense over the past 10 or 15 years or so. And we can remember even the big push when the Obama administration was in the White House for, you know, more funding for community colleges and more diverse educational choices. And so and they're just all kinds
Absolutely.
Of jobs that have opened up for associate's degrees or even certifications that may be offered by community colleges. And they are great options. So Connie, congratulations. Thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate you.
Congrats, Connie.
Yeah, there you go. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's move a little farther forward. Okay, so you've got this debt. What do you do now?
Okay, so the first thing that all borrowers need to do is know their complete loan portfolio. You can have federal loans, you can have private loans, but it's very easy to forget how much you owe overall. So the first step toward eradicating the debt is to get a full picture of exactly how much you owe. So I'd recommend that people go pull a copy of their credit report, because that will include federal and private loans. And if people want to know specifically about their federal student loans, they can create an account on studentaid.gov, which is a website run by the Department of Education's Office of Federal Student Aid. Now, after a person has a full picture of their student loans, the next step is to locate any applicable forgiveness or cancellation opportunities. So I usually direct people to follow the same steps that they would take when looking for funding, when they're looking for the search for forgiveness or cancellation. So start with the federal government at that website, studentaid.gov. That's where they can find information about loan forgiveness programs that are available for people who work in public service or people who are teachers. Also, there's information at the IRS about benefits as far as paying taxes are concerned. The state, same thing. Go to your state's higher education agency or governing authority, and they'll have information about any types of loan repayment assistance programs that are available for state residents. Go to the local sites as well. There may be incentives for people to buy homes or properties in a certain city and get a benefit that could help them repay down their student loans. And another place that people should go is their employer. Visit the HR benefits website, see if there are any types of incentives or repayment assistance programs for student loan borrowers.
Wow. What does that loan forgiveness look like? If you could kind of walk us through that, because that may be really new information for a lot of people.
Sure. So the larger program that I mentioned first is called Public Service Loan Forgiveness. And Public Service Loan Forgiveness is designed for people who are working in public service careers. So anyone who's working for a 501c3 not-for-profit organization or for the government, their career would be considered public service. So with the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, a person can make payments for 10 years. That's monthly payments for 120 months. And then they can apply to have the balance of their loans forgiven tax-free. So So essentially, it could cut your repayment term from 25 years down to 10 years. And after those making payments for 10 years and working in public service for 10 years, you have the balance forgiven tax-free. Unfortunately, a lot of people have not had success gaining forgiveness through that program. Much of it is from being unclear about the requirements of the program and also some people who just completed the application incorrectly. But there's a lot of information about the requirements, the application at studentaid.gov. And a benefit for people who are working in public service right now and have those federal direct student loans, all of these months that we've been benefiting from this forbearance from March of 2020 up and through September of this year, these months count toward the 120 payments that a person needs for public service loan forgiveness. So this is more than a year and a half where people who are in those public service careers haven't had to make any payments, haven't had any interest accruing, but are gaining credit toward those 120 payments that they need in order to apply for public service loan forgiveness.
Wow, that's incredible. Now, one of the questions I'm sure a lot of people want to know is what impact might this have on their credit?
The loan forgiveness piece?
Yes.
So the loan forgiveness, your debt will be canceled, so wiped out. And that is something that will help you in terms of credit because that is an obligation that you are no longer expected to repay, and lenders will not see it as a burden on your cash flow. Mm.
But for those, for example, who allow those loans to go into default, let's talk about that.
Yes. So default is quite different. There are some very serious consequences for default the minor end. First, that activity will be reported to credit bureaus, so lenders will be able to see that you did not make your payments on time as promised, and if they see default, they know that that's been going on for quite some time. Also, certain jobs require a credit check, and if it comes back that your credit history is not the greatest and you defaulted on your federal student loans, you may have a job offer rescinded. If you have a professional licensure, your licensure could be revoked, and that would, of course, prevent you from working in the field that you earned a degree in and earning money to pay off those student loans. In the worst case, your benefits can be garnished, your tax refund could be seized, and you could be sued and be held responsible for any fees that are associated with the cost of trying to track you down for those payments. So the consequences are far-reaching, but they are avoidable. In the moment that any borrower thinks that they're not going to be able to make a payment, the best thing to do is reach out to their loan servicer and ask for the options, because it's much better to say upfront, I'm having issues, I might not make my payment, than to ignore it and allow those negative consequences to come into play.
Short of hitting the lottery, what other resources might you share with us to help relieve some, if not all, of that college debt?
So I think that people need to truly just take the first step to get a full awareness of exactly what it is that they owe, because then they'll be able to come up with a plan to address it all and hopefully maximize the benefits so that they pay the least amount out of pocket possible.
I want to, during this last 10 minutes or so, talk about, you know, your book, Borrowing While Black. Talk to me about that. Why that title?
So Borrowing While Black, believe me, I played with lots of titles before I started Borrowing While Black. However, I thought about, you know, what is the crux of this? Who am I trying to reach? And I'm trying to reach Black students and families to increase their awareness of the higher education financing system and hopefully allow them to take actions that will improve their outcomes. And part of the inspiration for writing the book was actually a Howard University journalism student. I was on Twitter during a BET show called Young, Gifted, and Broke, just going back and forth with some people with student loan questions. And after the show, I had a student reach out to me and say, you know, I'm writing a story on student loan debt, you know, for one of my media classes. Can you tell me, you know, some more about this and that? And so my first instinct was to Google, well, who else wrote about this so I can just send her something without having to reinvent the wheel? And what I found was that there are not a lot of resources out there that are dedicated to explaining this system to students and also giving them tips to navigate the system. So that's when, you know, the ideas started spinning around. And I said, you know, I've got to write this book. So I credit the student, her name is Cheyenne from Howard University, for helping push me to write this book.
Where is Cheyenne now? Have you kept in touch?
I have. I sent her a promotional copy of the book once it was in print. She's moved back home to Pennsylvania, but we stay in touch.
Wonderful. You know, one of the things that I found, and this was several years ago, had an opportunity to talk to a student who was doing putting together a GoFundMe page because she was concerned about not being able to get back to school in the upcoming semester. And later on that day, I went to find the page to see whether or not she had finished. And while doing so, I just stumbled upon thousands of GoFundMe pages of students looking for a little bit or a lot of money to finish school, to go back or to not leave, not to drop out. These were students with, you know, great grades, some perhaps not the best. And it was really heartbreaking to see students from all over the country looking for money.
Yes, I've seen some of them too, some that are from the same student every year. And I think about, one, just how uncomfortable of a space that is to be in when you're trying to concentrate and succeed academically, but you don't know if you're going to be dropped from your seat or if you're going to be able to register for the next semester. And two, just to know that your fate is in the hands of someone else to make a donation to your cause. That's a very, I imagine, stressful place to be in. And it also speaks to how the affordability of college has declined over the years. So we definitely have some work to do.
Where are we? There are a lot of people still wondering, hey, what happened to that $50,000 of college forgiveness that the president was talking about?
So my guess is as good as yours is because my language is policy. So until it hits the paper, you know, all of these things floating around are just ideas. So I've heard it might be $10,000, it could be $50,000. There could be different relief programs for people who are in different circumstances as far as repayment is concerned. And then on the extreme, it could be that all debt is canceled. So I'm hopeful that some form of large-scale cancellation will take place. And I'll also say that even though white borrowers owe a larger portion of student loan debt, I strongly believe that black people, especially black women, stand to benefit the most if some type of large-scale forgiveness comes about.
Why do you say black women?
I say black women because we pursue higher education more than many groups. And when we do pursue higher education, we usually borrow more than everybody else. When we enter the workforce, we're usually paid at a wage penalty or a lower rate than most other groups. So if you have higher than average debt and lower than average earnings, what do you think that repayment experience is going to look like? It's going to take longer. It's going to have more difficulty. So if there is some type of large-scale cancellation that comes about, I'm looking for black women to see a huge improvement in day-to-day cash flow management. I'm seeing them feel, or I should say us, I'm seeing us feel as though, you know what, I'm going to go out on a limb and apply for that position in another unit or at another company because I know I don't have this debt hanging over my head. I see so many people saying, you know what, I have room to breathe, and I think a lot of us could use that.
You know, one of the things that has always been a plus is if you can't afford to go to your number one choice, which may be in California or New York or Miami or Texas or wherever, away from your state, to look inside of your state because in-state tuition can be considerably less if you go to a great state school in your state as opposed to going to a great state school that is not in your state. And we could be talking about thousands of dollars difference even in one semester.
Yes, the out-of-state tuition markup can be enormous. So if people are really focused on affordability, I would say you have to look within your state first. If you really are having a difficult time coming up with the money, or even if you're not, explore the community college as an option for the first 2 years, because you can gain a comparable education at a much lower price and then transfer to a four-year institution to finish the degree. So we have to stop thinking of college so much as the dream. I've got to go to my dream school. It's more about reality. This is what the picture is. This is how much it costs. This is how much you stand to benefit. Make the decision you are most comfortable with, because you're going to have to repay anything that you borrow, plus interest.
Final thoughts as we consider this graduation season and college debt, or even those who have yet to get there. What do you want people to take away from this conversation?
I want people to take away that finances can be a barrier to completion, but there are actions that you can take to lower the risk that you will have to drop out due to finances. Follow that list. Start with the government, from federal, state, down to local. Explore your private resources, like the local credit unions that one caller mentioned, employers, places of worship, athletics teams, fraternities, and sororities, and then look at your household and figure out how much can you realistically contribute. And once you've done all that research, make a decision that you're comfortable with for yourself.
Are you done paying?
Oh, no, I'm not. I am not. You don't get to be the good doctor without some student loans.
Oh, my gracious. And you've got at least one little one.
I have two.
Two,
now,
see?
But I have, must say, in my defense, I just completed my doctorate in 2017. So my loans are from 4 years ago.
And like I said, you have two. They're going somewhere. So let's get it together, young folks, already.
Yes.
Right? Dr. Tisa Silver Kennedy, thank you so much for talking to us. What's your website, by the way, real quick?
Thank you, Harold. It's tisasilver.com.
TISASILVER.com. It's going to be posted on our website tonight after 8:30. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, May 21st. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bramante Bryant, producer Candace Atkins, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night and have a wonderful weekend.